There are schools of thought that believe we have unlimited scope and possibilities for making decisions. The truth is that our scope is somehow restricted and we have less room. It is therefore key that we engage in innovative decision-making to optimize opportunities in our business and our personal lives. We need to understand our decision-making skills as individuals and organizations. This will enable us to adjust accordingly to the constant changing environment. Question: if Jesus had taught at Harvard Business School on these related issues, what would he have to say? My name is Tinuke Akinbulumo. Welcome to today's episode of the If Jesus Taught at Harvard Business School podcast. Decision-making lies at the heart of our spiritual, personal, and professional lives. Every day we make decisions. Some are small, domestic, and innocuous. Others are more important, affecting people's lives, livelihoods, and well-being. Inevitably, we make mistakes along the way. The daunting reality is that enormously important decisions made by intelligent, responsible people with the best information and intentions are sometimes flawed. We will look at the reasons for this later on. What is strategic decision making? Strategic is associated with having focus and having a sense of purpose, of direction, and avoiding distractions. Hence, we are familiar with phrases like strategic analysis, strategic planning, etc. On the other hand, decision making can be regarded as an outcome of the mental process, the cognitive process, leading to the selection of a course of action among several alternatives. Every decision-making process produces a final choice. The output could be an action or an opinion of choice. Some of the key words to note, which will comprise the components of tonight's session, are outcomes, mental process, selection, course of action, alternatives. Decision-making is not an event, it is a process. One that unfolds over weeks, months, or even years. One that is fraught with power plays and politics, and is replete with personal nuances and institutional history. One that is rife with discussion and debate, and one that requires support at all levels of the organization when it comes to execution. In part one of this discussion, we shall be looking at the framework of the decision-making framework. And in part two, we shall explore further using case studies.
Thank you, Tinuke. Strategic decision making is about making choices that will have a lasting impact on our lives. We are told that we are the sum total of the choices that we make. And when it comes to the strategic implications involved in making decisions, we need to take into account the following key parameters. 1. Does the decision align with either our individual or group visions? Does it align with our mission statements or our purpose for existence? Does it align with our core values or our behavioral guidelines? What is the impact of the decision on those close to us, either internally or externally? And finally, what are the implications politically, economically, socially, technologically, environmentally, and legally? Decision-making involves the scheme of masterminding the future direction of our lives and having an effective framework in place that will enable us to make quality and timely decisions. The current environment that we live in is very volatile. We cannot predict or control the everyday circumstances that we face. But we can adopt a decision-making style that prevents stress, enables us to be more decisive, and enables us to focus on our purpose for existence. When it comes to making choices, we need to be clear about our goals, the issues or problems at hand, and the options or alternatives available. We also need to understand any possible consequences or outcomes due to past investigations regarding the decision or the decisions being made. Now, having this process in place guides us in developing optimum responses, and presenting innovative options. It enables us to think analytically in scrutinizing and quantifying the available options with the ultimate aim of implementing the right decision. Some key pointers for an effective decision-making framework are as follows. 1. Understand what you want the decision to achieve in terms of the impact of the decision in the short to medium term, the relevance, importance, and significance of the decision being made, the impact on resources and time. 2. The power of information. Spend quality time gathering quality information. Identify the data sources for implementing the decision. Where required, source a subject matter expert in the field of the decision that you are about to make. Avoid assumptions and gather facts. Don't rely on hearsay, a valuable advice given to me by a partner, that always come with the truth. Even the Bible tells us that only the truth sets you free. Embrace and review the perspective of others regarding the decision, for we are told again in the Bible that in the multitude of counsel, there is safety. 3. Outline the alternatives or the options and their consequences. Again, valuable advice given to me as well by a partner and PwC telling me, Ade, don't come to me without options or potential solutions, because by coming to me with these, it reduces the discussion time and it quickens the decision-making process. In other words, don't leave the fate of your decision in the hands of others. What are the pros and the cons of the decision that you're about to make? What support do you have to either support or challenge the decision? You need to understand the long and short-term consequences, taking into account that when it comes to decision-making, what you sow, you will reap. Have you carried out what is called a SWOT analysis against the decisions that you're about to make? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. What are the impacts of each of these factors on the choices that are about to be made? 4, judge each of your options against your vision, against your mission, against your core values. A tool that we used to use in university, I did statistics, one of my courses was called a decision tree. It was a tool which was used to evaluate options. Now, the key thing regarding options is that a choice has to be made. You can have all the options in the world, but you will have to make a choice. An example is in the Bible again, where Elijah is asking the children of Israel, how long will they falter between two opinions? Follow God or follow Baal? Just make a choice. Which leads to the fifth point we need to take into consideration when it comes to having an effective decision-making framework. Implement decisions. You need to be able to inform the relevant people regarding the decision. Explain the reason why the decision was made. And on some occasions, you need to get the right people or the right team to implement the decision. A case study from the book of Judges supports the importance of implementation when it comes to decision making. The children of Israel were faced with a very critical question regarding how they were going to respond to a wicked act carried out to the concubine of a certain Levite who was killed in a very brutish way. The extract of the case study goes like this. When her master arose in the morning and opened the doors of the house and went out to go his way, there was his concubine, fallen at the door of the house with her hands on the threshold. And he said to her, get up and let us be going. But there was no answer. So the man lifted her onto the donkey, and the man got up and went to his place. When he entered his house, he took a knife, laid hold of his concubine, and divided her into 12 pieces, limb by limb, and sent her throughout all the territory of Israel. And so it was that all who saw it said, no such deed has been done or seen from the day that the children of Israel came up from the land of Egypt until this day. And this is the key extract point. Consider it, confer, and speak up. In other words, I've presented all the facts. Now, you need to consider it. you need to discuss and you need to come up with a decision. It has to be implemented. I quite like this case study because it reinforces what has been called the three C's of effective decision making. The first C is called constructive conflict. There has to be discussions which will involve disagreements over ideas and assumptions. In addition, it takes into account personal friction, rivalries, and clashing personalities. That's why this first C is called constructive conflict. The second C is called consideration. There needs to be openness and there needs to be the willingness to accept the different views and perspectives of those involved in making decision. And the final C is called closure, knowing when to end deliberations and to make the decision. And the final point, number six, is review the consequences of the decision made. Now, there is a measure called KPI, called the Key Performance Indicator. And what this does is that once a decision has been made, you're able to assess the impact on your finances, the impact on your customers, the impact on your internal processes, and finally, the impact on your learning and development strategy. If you're doing anything wrong, how can we improve it so that our KPI figures, which are the most crucial figures of an organization, can be improved? In summary, I will outline the decision-making framework that we're aiming to achieve. Number one, it needs to align with the following: your vision, which gives you the purpose to the decision being made. Your mission gives clarity to the decision being made. Your core values gives behavioral guidelines regarding the decision that you're going to make. Your stakeholders defines the people impacted by your decision. The internal assessment assesses the resource capabilities to support your decision. External assessment, the impact of external factors on the decision that you're about to make. And finally, organizational structure to monitor and support the decision that you're about to make. In the next segment, we shall be looking at the decision-making process in more details. When it comes to the decision-making process, there are two schools of thought. The first school is called advocacy, and the second school is called the inquiry. Advocacy process and the inquiry process. Now, in the advocacy process, the concept of decision-making tends to be a contest, which in my opinion is not a very humble approach as it's mostly based around persuasion and lobbying, not a concept which aligns with God's way of decision-making, where, for example, in the first book of Isaiah, God advocates that we come together. Why don't we come together? Why don't we reason? Come, let us reason. Let's discuss. Nothing mentioned about coming together to persuade, to argue, to force or lobby, which is normally associated with this style of decision-making. Participants in this process tend to act as spokespeople without any consideration for the other parties involved. People can sometimes get so passionate about the decision they want to make that they will actually not listen to anyone else's suggestion. I remember on a project once, I was caught up in this style of decision making where we were looking for a solution to an issue and we totally ignored the opinions and the options that were being presented by a colleague of ours because of our perception of her based on mistakes that she had made in the past. Guess what? Her options and her opinions is what solved the issue, which was a critical issue at that point in time. I now understand why in meetings we sometimes see guidelines that say everyone can contribute and there's no stupid suggestion. In this style of decision making, as I said earlier, people strive to persuade, people strive to defend, to downplay suggestions presented by others. The views of others are discouraged, dismissed. Now, the outcomes around this process generally tends to promote winners and losers. Not a friendly approach, in my opinion, when you look at the characteristics around the second school of thought, which is the inquiry process. Now, in this style of decision making, the concept of decision making is based on collaborative problem solving, similar to the advice given to us by God, where he advocates us coming together, reasoning together. Now, in this style of decision making, the discussions are based on effective testing and evaluation of all options presented. The participants in this style of decision making tend to think critically the conversations are two-way and based on balanced discussions. There's an openness to alternatives from all parties and also an open environment to constructive criticism, which is the first C of the three C's of decision making. All views are welcomed and valued in this style of decision making. The outcomes are normally based on a collective ownership from all parties involved. Most of our discussions onwards and the case studies which we will be looking at in part two will be based on the inquiry approach. Now, in our earlier discussions, we spoke about the importance of identifying the key people that are influential in the decision-making process. King David is a key case study that, again, we'll be exploring in details in part two. We are told that he constantly strengthened himself in the Lord so that the decisions he made were spirit-led and not made in the flesh, which tends to associate with things like emotions, negative thinking, prejudice, peer pressure, man-pleasing, and so on, which are not factors or conditions that promote effective decision-making. Now, when it comes to emotion, the impact of emotion-led decision confirms the work done by neurosurgeons that some leaders make decisions largely through unconscious processes called pattern recognition and emotional tagging. Now, both of these processes usually make for quick, effective decisions, but they can be distorted by self-interest, emotional attachment, or misleading memories. This is because our brains tend to leap to conclusion and are sometimes reluctant to consider the alternatives that have been presented. We are particularly bad at revisiting our initial assessment of a situation. As a result, managers need to find, or leaders need to find, systematic ways to recognize the sources of bias, or what people call red flag conditions. And once identified, frameworks, safeguards need to be introduced, which contribute more analysis, greater debates, or stronger governance when it comes to decision making. Remember the three C's of decision making, which addresses these issues, you know, the constructive criticism, considering, and implementing. So the frameworks in place have to take into account that there can be red flag conditions which need to be managed. And as mentioned earlier, red flags are caused by presence of inappropriate self-interests, presence of distorting attachments, and presence of misleading memories. Now, what is pattern recognition? Now, this is a complex process that integrates information from as many as 30 different parts of the brain. So when we are faced with a new situation, we make assumptions based on prior experiences and judgments. Thus, a chess master can assess a chess game and choose a high quality move in as little as 6 seconds. Why? He draws on patterns he or she has seen before. Therefore, pattern recognition can also mislead us. When we are dealing with seemingly familiar situations, our brain tends or causes us to think we understand them, when because of the lack of analysis, we actually don't understand what decisions or appropriate decisions need to be made. Now, when it comes to the second area called emotional tagging, this is a process by which emotional information attaches itself to our thought patterns and experiences that are stored in our memories. This emotional information tells us whether to pay attention to something or not, and tells us what sort of actions we should be contemplating. Emotional tagging helps us to reach sensible decisions most of the time, but it too, similar to pattern recognition, it can mislead us. Now, consulting the Lord our God injects checks and balances into this process. Hence why we said earlier that King David was spirit-led, because of the dangers or the lack of complete analysis that pattern recognition or emotional tagging brings to the decision-making process. So when we consult our Lord regularly, this gives us the checks and the balances that we need. In other words, being spirit-led gives us the checks. It gives us the balances. Now, we cannot rely on leaders or team members to always to be able to spot and safeguard against their own errors in judgment. Hence why we need to constantly take our decisions to the Lord. I mean, an example, the unstable emotions of King Saul in the Bible tells us that he went to seek a decision from the witch of Endor. I mean, I'm laughing there. It's amazing what emotions can make us do when it comes to decision making. As I said, his unstable emotion caused him to seek decision from a witch. Now, in addition, the following can be carried out to ensure that we have safeguards against decisions that can go wrong as a result of either pattern recognition or emotional tagging. One, impose stronger governance of authority and accountability for decision making. Point number two, inject fresh experiences or analysis from new ways of approaching the choices to be made. Hence why collaborative discussion should be promoted and not autocratic discussions. And three, introducing further debate and challenges to gain a wider perspective of options or alternatives that have been presented. In the next segment, we shall be looking at decision-making teams and decision-making styles. It is important that everyone on the team is on the same page throughout the decision-making process regarding the goals and the objectives. In the Old Testament, when it came to making decisions, the high priest determined God's will for the nation of Israel by consulting the Urim and the Thummim, which means curses and perfections, and it gives them a rough idea of the nature of God and God's will regarding the decisions that they have to make. The Urim and the Thummim were kept in a pouch, and they were either taken out or shaken out to get a yes or no decision. Only the high priest could carry and use the Urim and the Thummim. So it was crucial that, for example, King David and the priests were on the same page, or he won't be able to make the right decisions. In fact, keeping people involved in the process is, in the end, probably the most crucial factor in making a decision and making it stick, because everyone is on the same page. It's a job that lies at the heart of leadership, and one that uniquely combines a leader's numerous talents. It requires the fortitude as a leader to promote constructive conflict while also accepting ambiguity. For the leader to have wisdom to know when to bring the conversation to a close and implement the decision. To have the patience to help others understand the reasoning behind the decision that was made. And not least, you need to be a genius when it comes to balance, constructive discussion. The ability to embrace both the different characteristics on the team, which is divergence, that may characterize early discussions, and also unity needed from the team for effective implementation. Now, Cyrus the Great, the founder of the Persian Empire and a renowned military leader, he understood the true hallmark of leadership in the 6th century when he attributed his success to 1. Diversity in council, that's people bringing to different perspectives to the table, and unity in command, bringing all those different perspectives and coming up with a common strategy to make the decision. Hence, ensuring that even though the decision-making team is from a diverse background, we can still adopt a decision-making process where the team eventually comes out on the same page. We also see the importance of character when it comes to decision-making in leadership, in the attitude of Caleb and Joshua when it came to implementing decisions around the children of Israel going to the promised land. They were faced with numerous decisions that they had to make, which involved, you know, consulting with different stakeholders, with different people, with different, I mean, the effective leadership style of Joshua and Caleb enabled the children of Israel to go to the promised land. In the case of Joshua, who was the successor to Moses, it was said of him that he was a man in whom the Spirit of the Lord dwells. And we stressed earlier that, you know, effective decision making is about not being distracted by emotions, but being led, ensuring that the correct checks and balances, you know, support the decision that you are about to make. In the case of Caleb's decision-making attitude was reinforced by God's testimony of him having a different and obedient spirit. As mentioned earlier, the importance of not allowing unstable emotions to affect decision-making is key, and a relationship with the Holy Spirit gives us that stability when it comes to decision-making. In other words, strengthening ourselves in the Lord. When I was at PwC, I remember a partner advising us, sleep over every key decision that you're about to make, because the variables could change. Hence, in those days, when I was given 5 days to deliver a task, I would actually maximize the time given. I won't rush to deliver the results, as I said earlier, we live in a volatile environment and the variables could change overnight. I will still give them feedback during this period, but my thinking is, if I've been given 5 days, it was for a reason. Now, boldness and confidence is another attribute that is required when it comes to decision making, as we can see in the various responses of Joshua and Caleb regarding the decision to enter the promised land. They both had confidence and trusted in the Lord's promises that they would possess the promised land. In their decision making style, they always had at the back of their mind that if God was for them, who could be against them? In the next segment, we shall now be looking more in details around, you know, when the alternatives and when the options are presented, how you establish alternatives and selection criteria. We highlighted earlier that during the era of King David, that the response from the ephod, that is the Urim and the Thummim, could be a yes or no, based on selection criteria that had to align with God's will. Hence why King David would always ask for the ephod when it came to making decisions. Now, selection criteria can depend on a number of factors which can have an impact on the quality of the decisions being made. For example, resource availability, timing, objectives. We also highlighted some earlier in earlier segments, you know, your vision, mission statements, you know, external and internal stakeholders, environmental impacts. We mentioned this earlier. Selection criteria are critical and crucial in having an effective decision-making framework. One example that comes to mind was the approach adopted by Pontius Pilate when it came to making a choice between Jesus and Barabbas. Now, he was under pressure from three key stakeholders, from Caesar. Now, he was under pressure from Caesar, who had actually warned him regarding his handling of the Jews. There had been so many riots. And I think he had been warned that if he wasn't able to curtail the riots, he'll be sent back to Rome. His wife, who earlier warned him about the dream that she had, that he should not kill Jesus. And third, the elders, who wanted Jesus killed at all costs, and he had to make a decision. Now, I quite love the approach that Pilate used. Now, Pilate did not allow the pressure to have any impact on him as he shifted the pressure to make the decision onto the Jewish elders to choose, for them to choose between Jesus and Barabbas. Now, one of the steps prior to making the decision is to always identify the available options you have and the available alternatives that you have based on the resource that you have at hand, all the potential resources that you will have. Now, in his inquiry with the Lord, David, as you will see in part two, always presented options or requested for the options at hand. Now, as we conclude part one, the Apostle James reminds us of the importance of having well-defined selection criteria for making wise decisions. He goes like this. He says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness." So in any decision that we're about to make and we're seeking wisdom to make that decision, where we're constructing selection criteria and options, do we truly have a benchmark to base it upon? Do we have benchmarks to define our selection criteria and our options? As you can see, the options and the alternatives when it comes to wisdom. What type of wisdom are you using? Is it spiritual or is it unspiritual? Is the wisdom you're using, does it envy? Is it ambitious? Does it boast? Or alternatively, is it peace-loving? Is it considerate? Is it submissive? Now, as we conclude part one, it's very crucial that, as I mentioned earlier, we have an effective decision-making process in place which enables us to make decisions that are optimum, innovative, and efficient.
We end part one of this episode with some take-home points from the discussion around decision-making. Number one, in decision-making, be focused and be purposeful. Number two, establish core values to form the basis for well-defined selection criteria for making decisions. Number three, expand multiple alternatives and be open to a diverse range of options when it comes to decision making. Number four, this can be achieved by having a relationship with God who has a greater perspective. He sees everything under the sun. Number five, establish a robust set of assumptions that are based on the truth and not hearsay. Number six, learn to be an effective listener so you can discern and acquire the relevant information for making decisions. And finally, number seven, one may need to take solitude to focus and avoid distractions. Jesus withdrew on many occasions to the wilderness to pray for clarity. My name is Tinuke Akimbulumo. Goodbye and God bless.